instead of primarily going, how do I govern or structure a local church first, instead
yes.
of thinking church all the time,
yes.
start out by thinking mission, which is, how do I reach people?
Welcome to Touring for Purpose podcast. I am Mingo, your host, and this conversation has always been Touring for Purpose.
Oh, touring. I thought you said chewing.
Welcome to Chewing for Purpose podcast. This conversation, like every other conversation we have on the podcast, is really about giving insight to emerging leaders within the organization that they're working. They're listening for insights on how to be better communicators and better relationally connected to the generation ahead of them. We want to like be generation reconciliators.
Okay.
Is that a fair word?
Wow, that is a big...
We're trying to accomplish
that
in this little device right here.
Perfect.
Pumping out to the internet.
Yes,
so,
yes.
Mark, you and I, we talked about a month ago in Palm Desert, and
yes.
I just loved our conversation because you basically told me you wanted to light all of Canada on fire. You want mm-hmm. the entire population of Canada to know Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, the whole population of Canada is basically the population of the state of California. And so when we started the church 7-8 years ago, when 16 of us were sitting around mm-hmm. in my townhouse, mm-hmm. we said, what would it look like to not just start a church, which we want to do, and that local impact is massive and important.
Yes, yes.
But what does it look like to take that and say, what if we could affect a nation in some way? What if we could plant churches in really strategic city centers across Canada, Vancouver, Calgary, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, mm-hmm. where we could plant gospel center churches that could affect those areas, and we'd actually be able to maybe make an impact across Canada, because you have it's a very unique situation. 35 million people, kind of all crammed into, you know, the majority of them along the border.
Right, right, right.
And so you have all these, you have an opportunity.
It's tangible. You can imagine it.
You can literally imagine affecting the nation in some way, whereas for you guys, that'd be a bigger ordeal.
I think coast to coast. I know probably there are some pastors that saw it or see it, and they're trying to figure it. Brian Houston's like, I'm going for the globe,
sure.
right?
Yeah.
But you see Canada, and you can shoot the borderline and go like, I think we can do this as a church, right?
Yeah.
That vision.
Or at least shoot for it. And that's part of the thing is the risk that if we know, I was talking to one of the sessions today, mm-hmm. that if you know that your identity is in the gospel already and you're beloved and in you I'm well pleased.
Thank you.
All
I feel
that,
beloved. I feel beloved right
in
now.
You I'm well pleased before Jesus even done anything yet at his baptism, then we can take risks, and some of them will fail and some of them will succeed. And if the failures happen, that's okay, because we know it's not our identity at stake.
Yeah.
We're taking risks for the sake of the kingdom.
That's super good. And you talked about being the movement, right? Shepherding a movement. Give me like just a paragraph on your thoughts on that, because I know a lot of people my age. How old are you?
36.
You're 36. Yeah. I'm 34. So we're kind of in the same. I was born in 82. You're
okay,
born in 80.
80.
Period.
Yeah.
Millennial. You're on the bump.
Right.
You're the millennial bump, dude.
Yes.
And then tweeners, those are the, we don't know who they were or what age, grade. And then we have all the Xers. And then they say Xers, the forgotten generation, poor guys.
Right.
Then boomers.
Right.
John, what category do you fall into?
Boomer.
You're a boomer.
Just on the edge of it. So 63, born in 63.
Okay,
so,
awesome.
So 50, whatever I am, 54 to 53 right now.
Okay, and this is,
I can't remember.
I won't tell.
Yeah.
So here's what I want to know. So as a millennial, I'm going to lump you into that one, or maybe a tweener. That's a terrible name. But there are lofty ambitions in our generation. Like we looked at transportation and said, I think we can change this.
Sure.
Boom, Uber's born,
right?
We were like, I don't want to go to Blockbuster and go sort through VHS videos and then be disappointed that it's not behind the cover.
Right.
We'll make Netflix, right? Grocery stores, Amazon, name your vehicle. Basically, the millennial generation on the backs of Gen X have really disrupted a lot in our world culturally. And then we've got the church now. So it's like, how are you seeing, with the kind of vision that God has put in your hands, people are looking at you and going, dude, that's impossible, right? Or are you hearing that, or are you not hearing that?
I don't hear that's impossible. I think you just have to like for one of the things that I think our generation is, and of course nothing's new under the sun, so other people are doing this too, but trying to put the responsibility and the authority back into the hands of the church. And so, yes, leaders are great. Pastors are great, mm-hmm. but what I'm excited about is you look at movements throughout history. The fastest moving, greatest movement in the history of the world is happening right now, and it's in China. The gospel is moving faster in China than it's ever moved in the history of the planet right now as we're sitting here. And what is that situation? It's basically almost illegal. Mm. So what you've got are, we have created this professional leader, professional pastor, be my guru.
Pathways, development processes.
And what you see is the movements that have impact are the ones where the church takes back the responsibility. Jesus kicks the keys back and goes, you take it.
Yeah, that's really good.
What you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth will be loose in heaven. So, go be the church. Mm. So I see that's what I get excited about. It's like, yes, we can try to do our best to organize, to inspire, to give structure, to make sure the gospel and community and culture are central. We can do those things, which are the three values that we look at. But it's the church going and being soccer moms and business owners and entrepreneurs and doctors and
being
lawyers.
You,
that's going to be the change. Yeah.
Jesus in you lit up where you are.
That's the only way the movement's actually ever going to work. And so that's why you look at China. The whole thing's under, you know, when Mao took over and it became illegal in the 40s and then the bamboo curtain raises in the 70s, they had kicked out all the missionaries, right? There was basically 2 million Christians, they thought, when Mao took over. Yeah. They kicked everybody out, nationalized all the buildings, killed all the lead pastors, persecuted second and third tier. Mm. So they thought when they went back in the 70s, there'd be no Christians.
Right.
There was 60 to 80 million Christians there because the church took the authority back, took the responsibility back. That's what I want to see happen.
Now, as the pastor carrying that vision to pastor the movement, I sense that you are, that keeps you up at night. How are we going to go there? How are we going to go there? Lord Jesus, give me the vision. How John, the executive pastor in this relationship, this is a relationship, how do you manage the pastor who's on his knees asking for the vision? That's part of the tension I assume a lot of people wrestle with is like, please don't hold me back, or please help me figure out how to navigate this. This is too wild for me to deal with on my own. If I'm speaking on my own behalf and I don't have the platform you have as a senior pastor, but I've got this crazy vision that we could tell stories that need to be told everywhere, but I need help because I can only brain it so much, and I can be on my phone and I can elevate some people, but a guy like you comes into the mix and it goes farther, faster, smoother. How do you operate inside of this mechanism, inside of this organism that we call Village Church?
That's a great question. It's really starts with trust, loyalty, chemistry, on the same page, and knowing where our gift sets are, where our abilities are. Mark's visionary, apostolic, new ideas constantly. That's what drove me. And you talk about the previous generation not, you know, have as much vision. I had it. It's just the church didn't inspire me. It's like I went to church, I did that, but no church had a big enough vision. I was in the corporate world. So coming on here is like, okay, now this is something, whoa, this is something I can get into.
Yeah.
This is something we can chew. Finally, someone's thinking the same way as we do in the corporate world, like taking over. You know, in this, in some cases with products, would have this, in this case, with the best message in the world, in history. So in working with Mark, it's then knowing that I'm not number one in that. I'm not the voice, but I'm the person that can fill in all the, not all of them, but a lot of the blanks that Mark doesn't have. And it's really, we talk about it as, you know, the beast in the sense that you don't want to tame it.
Yeah.
It's like, that'll ruin it.
Yeah.
So it's finding a way to work with all the ideas, and no idea is a bad idea. And for at least a minute.
Right. Dude, here, take my microphone.
Yeah, no, John's great at that because there's days where I come in and it's like, okay, idea hit me, you know, wherever. And what's great about him and what his role out there would need, it's never like a no that's dumb, you know, let me go back to, it's like, okay, let's chase that down. Yeah. And we were just talking about this on the way here. Like, just this sense of like, yeah, let's tease that out, see if it could actually work. Let's, hey, if we built the right systems around that, this could actually maybe, you know, rarely is he like, ah, this is the dumbest idea I've ever heard, you know. And so he came into the whole thing with a vision of wanting to do something big, like he said. So he was there right from the beginning. So even the whole vision was a very much shared, and that relationship was unique.
Together.
Yeah, we launched together. He was part of the 16 people who was sent out from our church that gathered in our townhouse and went, what would we want to plant? And John and I would sit and have lunch and go, what if this, what if that? So
I remember you saying in our first conversation, you said, you can't come to the table and say, hey, I want to start a church. I want to start Village in my neighborhood. And then you say, who are you going to do it with? And they're like, oh, here's my 16-year-old friend. Here's my 19-year-old friend.
Right.
You got to have John's in your corner.
100%. Yeah, totally. And a lot of planters go out and try to do the, hey, everyone's 22 and it's, you know, they have no money. They just want to be on stage and they're trans. And rightfully so, there's this life stage. They get a girlfriend, they go to school, whatever. Right. So I inspire them to like have a John and his wife, have someone who's, you know, got a good career, got stability, has proven himself, has money, you know, that kind of stuff where it's like they can actually help support and drive this thing with you. And so we had 65-year-old couple in our group, another 45-year-old couple, like, so that's the kind of group you want to try to get in a church plant scenario. And then someone who just, the DNA, the chemistry is just there.
John, you were going to say something. What were you going to say?
Wow. I can't remember.
Probably something about DNA and chemistry that I just took.
Yeah, exactly what he said. It's just knowing that there's loyalty, that you work out your stuff together on your own, but out in front of staff, in front of everyone, you are absolute on the same page.
You're unified to death.
You know, and that's not an unknown. That's true all over. We know that. But it has to be real. It can't be manufactured.
That's good.
It can't be, in this case, it's not something you're going to hire out. It's based on relationship to start. Yeah. So if you're a church planner, knowing who's that person that is filling in the other pieces that you don't have.
I have a question for you. How is it that you guys work out tension? If I was in your position in reverse, where I was like right behind John and there was a senior pastor, and me and you had a tension between us because I really sought after the calling, or a version of a calling like Mark. How do you guys solve that kind of tension as you're raising young leaders inside of your organization? Because there's something probably you do that looks very different than something you do, but you're both pushing towards the same thing. How do you farm or crop, or how do you cultivate the next generation of leaders inside of your guys' own organization?
Well, it's a bit of a tension because we're so young. And so being 7 years in, we've played a lot of catch up. So we don't have those like perfect structures
installed structures, but nonetheless, they don't have to be hired. They could just be hanging.
Yes.
And they're like, we would love to know how you are doing what you're doing, Mark. Show me how you're in that lane. People are like, John, do I have to circumvent you? Do I go through you? That's what I want to know, because there's a lot of kids who watch this. Whoa, what's up, audience? They just showed out of nowhere. There's a lot of people who are wondering, Mark, I want to hear the kind of vision when Jesus hits you and you're like, we're going across Canada, west to east. Right. And then John, you're like, okay, I want to support that, but then I got to mediate all these guys who are watching, wondering, how do I get some time with that?
Right.
How are you guys managing that? Because there's an expectation, calibration that needs to happen for kids like me.
Yeah, no, and I think it's not only that, but it's even our staff is the best staff on the planet. They get the vision. They bleed for the vision. They bleed for, I mean, most of them are hired like John. Hey, you're out there working at this company. Come here. Hey, you're a teacher. Come here. Hey, you do this. Come here. So they're not a ton of ministry people. They haven't been sitting in church life for some of them are, and they're great,
like normal people.
But they're some of them, a lot of from the marketplace or whatever. So they they're amazing, amazing people, and they're doing, and they're in their zone, and they're specialists in many cases. And so the tension we come up with is when we're in whiteboard mode, is that just a mode that we need to stay in until it gets fleshed out and bring in a few people and brainstorm, kind of like a brain trust Pixar deal?
Yeah.
And then when is it that we bring that down to at what level so that they're in the zone, they're doing their thing in an amazing way? Is this going to sideline them?
Yeah.
for an idea that possibly is never going to actually happen, right? So, we get sidelined for 2 months on something that's never going to happen. Yeah. And it's attention. We never know what to do because, of course, they want to be a part of it and say, maybe we can speak into it. And maybe, we have something to say. And it's like 100%. But we don't want to distract you because we just tried 6 things and we're only doing one of them. So that's a constant tension I think anybody's in, and you've tried to manage that well.
Yeah, and it basic principles from even the sales industry where you don't tell your sales team the new products that are coming because it'll derail them on what they currently have. Mm-hmm. Like deal with what you have now. Don't start thinking about what you're going to sell next year because this is all we got. So some people can handle it. So it really depends on the person as to whether what you share, how much you share. And we find people that are typically better don't come out of a long church background. You know, we have some great people that have come out of a church background.
When you say better, can you try to qualify better? I want to wrap a definition around it.
100%. And now we hire great people, so we don't run into this, but we see it all the time where generally church people have a poor work ethic. Mm. Lazy sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Well, no, hold on. Just let me categorize. Yeah. So you'll work with people in ministry or you'll work with church planters, whatever, right. and the vibe is, hey, I came in at 10. I'm picking my kid up from school at 2. And it's like, dude, you had a 4-hour day. Yeah. Like that's not the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy 2 thing. Athlete, farmer, soldier, up before everybody, muscly, wow, working it, wow, hitting the farm. Wow. Like you need to be working all the time, tirelessly. This is not a lazy ministry job where you just kind of come in and out and you're kind of half engaged. Like we push against that and we say, that DNA will not work at Village very long. Like that's going to end poorly.
You're kind of speaking against like the whole lifestyle brand people. Right. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. You know?
Yeah, we're not trying to drum up like, hey, what like cool thing can we get into the office that will make people stay and let's give them all these like workout.
You're saying there's work that needs to be done. Whatever. We need to do the work.
Yeah, we try to have fun. We're really stringent. Make sure you take vacation. Like it's like you like. Rest, take time off, take a break, be healthy in it. But when you're in. You're all in.
Yeah,
it's
you're
like
going.
There's no, don't mess around, no sloughing off.
I appreciate that because I think that there's a.
What'd you call it? Sloughing off.
Sloughing off. Don't slough off. I don't, that could be a bad word. So for executive pastors, I want to give a special word to them as we talk. And I want to give a word to emerging leaders from the posture of a boomer. We don't have a lot of boomers on our podcast, so your posture matters in this conversation. What's something that we can do that will help the entire organization move forward, the whole vision move forward? Because I think a lot of times we come up with the answers in our minds. We don't even ask whether or not this is going to help, and we just try to execute, and they go, hey, we're doing something over here. How come we're not validating it? And then it sometimes works against the org. Sometimes you're like, hey, bro, vision, it's vision one, not division, not two visions going in different directions. Yeah. How as a seasoned leader would you coach emerging leaders to help be the best versions of themselves?
I think tap into the seasoned leaders, the people that do know about best practices of management, of best ways to do things, that there are, I teach our staff this thing called, it's not a course, but the talk about the economics of ministry.
Yeah.
That stuff costs money. It's just part of...
Just basic stewardship responsibility.
Yeah, but beyond that, like where you add up this plus this, we're spending this amount on this per youth, per kid, per adult, per whatever. Is that a good use of, you know, that kind of economy? I don't at all want to be known as the bean counter because that shouldn't limit what you do, but it certainly plays into. So tap into people around you that are seasoned. They're not broadly seasoned across every area of ministry, but maybe there's a financial thing. Maybe there's a management piece. Maybe there's a mentoring piece. Don't ignore it. There's knowledge there that applies. It's not a Christian thing versus secular thing. There's just good ideas.
It's a human thing.
We call it Judeo-Christian ethic, whatever you want to call it. But there are you know, it's a biblically, you know, God created our brains. Mm-hmm. So there is a spiritual yes. aspect that yeah. a good idea is from him. And it's not because it's the business world does it.
Right, right.
It's because yeah, yeah, yeah. it's a good idea.
I think, wouldn't you agree, John, too, that it's the way your generation would respect our generation is to you have to show a kind of maturity. You have to show that you're not just going all over the map where you got new crazy ideas every time you turn around and you can't actually execute them. They're not well thought through. There's a certain level of, okay, because I see a lot of young leaders out there. And when we raise the question of why haven't you been able to gather these 40-somethings, 50-somethings, 60-somethings, and your church plant stage or whatever it be, or it might be a young church even, or an older church that they come into, they're like, oh, part of it is just like you don't even think strategically. Right. You don't have the maturity level to like, gain their
you can't
respect.
Even piece together your thoughts, let alone yeah. present them to somebody who could help yeah. shape them.
Yeah, and show a plan. Like if you're sitting at a board of boomers or whatever, and they're like, "Hey, young pastor, why don't you show us like a strategy plan?" You're like, "Screw strategy! Right. It's all about you know, I'm a prophet or whatever." It's like. Okay, dude. Well, you're gonna lose everybody.
Yeah,
you have to,
yeah, yeah. Exactly. To the four people that yeah. you can figure yeah, out exactly. to like coax to come in with coffee, yeah. the idea of supporting a vision that's yet to be attained, but you guys have it on the map and you're relentless about it. I don't doubt you're gonna go all the way across Canada. It's just a matter of when, right? That's the way I think, because you're gonna be relentless about how. So it's just a matter of when, right? What do you tell somebody who is the visionary, who is in the process right where you are? Because you guys are trying to figure it out. What are some of the promises or some of the good words? What are some of the wisdom pieces that you have been holding on to as of recently that keep you going? That's the question I'm going to ask.
I think anytime you want to try to have impact or influence in any way, there's this constant conversation in your brain, especially in the Christian community, where it's like, is this wrong to, you know, shouldn't you just be local? Is it wrong to want to have this kind of impact and stuff? Like there's some of that tension of, is there something we need to be shy about? You know that, right? And just trying to find that balance of a spirit-led vision and humility, and to go, if God wants, we're just going to keep, like, we don't know the outcome. This latest idea could die. It could be these ideas that we come in, you know, ideas that we're going to launch, these programs, it could all fail. We could be sitting here, you know,
and
we'll be like, so that all was crap. Now, what are you doing? It's like, yeah, there's 200 people.
It's just a matter of how, right?
So it could all happen. Yeah. We know that. But all we're going to do is be faithful to say, you're going to take the next step.
That's good.
We're going to take the next step. Like when you talk to people to come on staff at your church, oftentimes they go, you know what? I was doing my job and all I heard from God was apply. Just take the next step. It might die, but he just told me to take whatever the next step was. I don't know what the result is. I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I said I'm going to come in for an interview, so that's what I did. That's all we're doing. Next step, no promise. God hasn't gone 100%, I'm giving you every promise.
And when did he ever unpack it all the way your brains would melt?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I love about the conversation we were having yesterday about like just celebrating the fact when people say yes to the call, whatever that is, it could be... It could be an utter failure on the other side. And certainly there are plenty of biblical examples where it was a call to failure in at least human eyes. Yeah. And God was like, I just needed to know if you would move.
Yeah.
That was it. Yeah. Because
that's what we're trying to steward, is we're trying to say, we have an urgency. We share an urgency to say every day people are dying and going to hell. That's what drives us every single day we wake up. So we'll do risks. We'll do whatever we can. There's an urgency about what we want to do because we want to do the most with the 15 minutes we've got.
Amen.
And so that's what we're trying to do.
I love that. Okay, closing question. One for each of you guys, okay? John, we're going to start with you. John, what from your posture as an executive pastor at one of the fastest moving churches, it's good, fastest growing, but you guys you're a movement. You've been preaching about movement all day today. So being a movement pastor at an executive level, what do I need to make sure I'm keeping in check as an emerging leader if I'm chasing a movement-sized vision from God?
The the obvious one is knowing that it's from God and it's not your own wishes.
Man, you say it's obvious, but you know that's probably going to check a lot of people.
Yeah, it's is it a dream you have because you had it, your dad, your grandfather, whatever, your wife? Is it something that's driving you from the flesh? And that's hard. You got to work that out. It's a real thing because it won't go anywhere. It'll be built on you and it'll crumble. So that's make sure the vision, the drive is coming from the Lord, first and foremost, 100%. Beyond that, then it's getting the right, getting the right team around you, I think. And that gets into culture and all this because you can't do it yourself. Obviously, God's at the top, you're there, but you're going to be missing a whole bunch of things around you that you need other people to come around you. And that gets into values and culture and some of those things. And it cultures you, the leader.
Yeah.
That's what drives it.
Yeah.
And so if you're not praying, if you're not leading, if you're not taking time with the Lord, if you're not inviting people to church, you know, like how many pastors out there don't have any Christian, non-Christian friends anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
It's like you're starting a movement and you don't know anyone who isn't a Christian. That's, you know, that's kind of that's
a slow movement.
So it's those culture values. Live it. The leader drives then everything that movement's going to embody.
They say the speed of the organization is only ever based on the speed of the leader, right? That nobody's going to throttle up or down the organization besides the leader. And it's the responsibility and the burden of the leader to accurately pace the organization according to everyone's ability to track with it. You know, yeah. Well, thank you, Mark. I appreciate that.
Good, I will interview you next.
Mark, tell me what you see as a visionary, right? And I love this because you and I are not far off in age, and I have lofty dreams for the church. I think that.
Hey, you keep calling me a visionary.
You
by
are,
the way.
Dude. You are a visionary to me.
We have ideas. I have ideas.
Yeah, we have ideas, okay. Right? Yes. Some call it vision. Some call it like pipe dreams. But right. Regardless, I go to sleep at night. I dream of something. I wake up and I'm like, oh my gosh, Jesus, is that something you want? Are we going to see that in my lifetime, right? As somebody who is, you know, recklessly or maybe not recklessly chasing their dreams, what do we need to watch out for? What's your commission to your peers? And then maybe could you give us a word for the rest of the executive pastors out there with all these squirrely dreamers running inside of their organizations and them having to deal with that?
Yeah. So the first thing I would say is, you know, we talk about movement and that kind of stuff. And where I even get that, or where we should get that idea, isn't from some kind of lofty ideals. I think what it is, Alan Hirsch in one of his books says, don't think church, think mission.
Yes.
So here's the thing. If you start out by not immediately thinking, let me think about ecclesiology first, but missiology. Let me not just.
Well,
think
bro, well, I got some kids who like watch this podcast, bro. They're gonna like.
Just too many.
Come on, dude. Seriously,
okay, sorry,
dude.
Sorry.
One more time. Hey, okay. We're gonna hit the rewind button right now.
Instead of thinking, instead of primarily going, how do I govern? Or structure a local church first instead of thinking church all the time.
Yes.
Start out by thinking mission, which is how do I reach people? Okay. And then you start understanding that. And so that's everything we're talking about movement. It's not about some kind of, it's about mission. So when we're thinking and praying and talking, our question is about the missiology. It's the how do we going to accomplish the mission? Then we work backwards and we go, okay, we got to structure this thing. We got to make sure there's some leaders in place and some people who are. But and so that's the priority for us, and I think should be the priority for the up and coming leaders, thinkers. It's okay, I got to think mission and think like a missionary. So whether you're reading New Begin and New Begin saying, hey, here I was a 30-year missionary in India, and this is, look, you go into India and you say, who wants to be born again? And everyone's like, already happened 35 times. So New Begin's going, okay, I can't say that.
You don't have to go all the way to India for that. You can just go to the local summer camp, bro.
Yeah.
And they're
exactly.
Like, I've been like, 4 years, I got saved four times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's true. You have to think like a missionary at all times. What does that look like in your culture? And then start working back to whether that's a church plant scenario or pastoring whether that's a parachurch thing. But make the mission the priority. The church is the vehicle that God uses to accomplish the mission.
That's
the issue. So
that was solid.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever heard it articulated that way. Such a visionary. I'm just joking.
All right, knock it off. Enough
okay,
of that.
So to the repeating what the Bible says. Thank you for keeping us in order, John. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. For the relationship between 30-somethings
right.
and the potential ceiling they feel like they're crashing into in the boomer executive pastor, what's your word for that?
You have to, like anything in life, you go back and read, I'm going to throw out, you know, Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. If you don't build a relationship first where the person buys into you and there's not a loyalty and a relationship and an understanding, you're never going to get anything past. So you have to strategically build a relationship of trust. Trust is the foundation for any relationship. So if you're looking at that, he doesn't understand me or whatever. We all think we're snowflakes and unique and all this stuff. It's garbage.
Look at me.
They're smarter. They're smarter than you think they are. It's like when you look at grandparents, you sit down with them and you think they're all, and then you sit down and you're like, what? You went to the war? You've already been through everything that I've been through.
That's good.
And so it's really understanding and using that and going, okay, you know, I can't tell you when we started our church and we started reaching entrepreneurs and 30-somethings and 40-somethings, I'm up there 29 years old in a hoodie. I'm not sure. Now, here's what you got to understand. Then they see John, who wasn't even working at the church at the time. He was just still my partner in it. And they're like, okay, this might actually be legit. Like, our money's going somewhere.
Yeah.
Because it's not going with him.
Like,
you know, whatever. So someone knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
And so you've got to use that and go, you got to, yes, do the prophetic thing and do the reckless thing. But people don't want reckless with something.
With, totally. They want their children to be in something secure.
Exactly. Yeah. So
not reckless.
So being able to use that and partner in that and leverage it is strategic. It's smart. It's what, you know,
necessary.
Yeah, necessary. And there's wisdom in life. And I mean, he raised two daughters that love Jesus and love the church. I got three daughters. I want them to love Jesus, love the church. That's my top priority. So I'm going to learn a lot from it. Hey, what did you do with this? What did you do with that?
That's really good.
So you got to be constantly looking up.
Yeah. Mark, I appreciate your time. John, I really appreciate your insight. Thanks for being maybe one of three boomers ever on the podcast. I think that we need more of your conversations.
I'll show you how to subscribe to this podcast later, John.
Oh my gosh.
Braille iPhone.
That's cold, bro. You're cold as ice, dude. Okay, so thank you to Bayside and to Thrive Conference who had us out. Dude, you were, even though I didn't go listen to you, you were really good. Dude, I'm sorry. I'm trying to shovel you a compliment right now, dude. You're on the docket, which means that what God is doing through your guys' church is cool. Yeah, I think that's awesome.
Thanks for having us.
I mean, one day I want to be a visionary like Mark. So to Purpose Driven Church and to the team here, thank you guys for having us. Mark, I just love your guys' chemistry. I'm praying that this inspires some people who are weeding through the frustration, like hear this chemistry and chase after it, right? I love that it was trust that was the overarching theme here. It was extending and communicating and being vulnerable and saying, hey, this is what's on my heart. Hey, this is what's on my heart. Let's put these two things together. Nobody disqualified the other person because of their birth year. That was so massive. So I'm walking away with a ton of stuff. Thank you for tuning in. We love you guys.
Thanks, guys.
We'll see you guys soon.